Have you ever taken a really bad situation and made it worse?
Amen.
Ever? I know I'm not alone. I thank you for that encouragement, brother. Have you ever taken a mediocre situation and fretted about it and fumed about it and worked it over until it was absolutely horrible? This morning, we're going to think about how to avoid that kind of self-inflicted misery, where we take a bad situation and make it worse. We take a mediocre situation and make it horrible. It's possible that we would even take a good situation, and by whining about how it could still be better than this, and I didn't get that one thing I wanted, that we even make that bad. Cry at our own birthday party before we're through. We're going to get that lesson by looking at a bad example. Sometimes you see somebody else being foolish and you go, oh, that reminds me of me. And so sometimes a bad example can help. And today's passage in the book of Job is one of those in which Job is giving us something less than a perfect example. Job was a righteous man, but like all righteous people, he still struggled. And so he's showing us that even the righteous struggle. And by looking at the mistakes he makes, we can take warning from his life and avoid this particular kind of problem, perhaps in our own lives, as we see what he struggles with and how he handles it the wrong way. Our text is, we'll begin anyway, with Job 29. We'll do part of chapter 30 before we stop today, but let's read Job 29 to begin with. Job 29, beginning with verse 1. Job is in the middle of his reply to the three friends. He's really summing it all up now. He's about to be finished with them. And it says, "And Job again took up his discourse and said, 'Oh, that I were as in months gone by, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the prime of my days, when the friendship of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, and my children were around me, when my steps were bathed in butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil. Then I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves, and the old men rose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongues stuck to their palate. For when the ear heard, it called me blessed. And when the eye saw, it gave witness of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. To me they listened and waited and kept silent for my counsel. After my words they didn't speak again, and my speech dropped on them. They waited for me as for the rain, and opened their mouth as for the spring rain. I smiled on them when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did not cast down. I chose a way for them and sat as chief, and dwelt as king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners.'" Now Job is remembering some very good times, and he's complaining in this passage that those good times are gone for him. It's all the more painful because the times were so good. He really really had it good. He was incredibly blessed. He knew what it was to have wonderful blessings from God. At that time, it was easy for Job to tell that God's hand was on his life. He essentially had everything a person could want. In verses 3 and 4, he says, "When his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the prime of my days when the friendship of God was over my tent." He was walking in blessing. He was walking in happiness. He knew that God's hand was upon him. It was a sweet time. It went on and on. He remembers these things very specifically. And he remembers the treatment that he got then very specifically. Young men were too awed to speak in his presence. Leaders and nobles put their hands over their mouths. They wanted to hear what he had to say. And when he spoke, nobody else had anything more to say. Nobody contradicted him. And he remembers all of this. And he remembers some of the things that he did that led people to respect him so much. He was a help to the poor. He was a comfort to the widows. He focused his life on other people when he didn't really have to do that. Not every rich person does that. He did this because he was this way. Nobody made him do it. He was righteous. He made a special effort at finding out the real situation before he helped somebody. So in verse 16, he says, "I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I looked into it to make sure that I wasn't being flim-flammed so that I could help the right people." He even intervened to stop wickedness. He went beyond helping those who were obviously in need of help and took steps to stop the trouble before it could come into their lives. He stepped out against wrong. He took a bold stand. He intervened. In verse 17, he says, "I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth." Job was an active guy. If somebody was wronging somebody and he had the power to stop it, he stopped it. He was decisive and quick, even snatching them at that last instant before they were ruined. Job remembers what he thought then when it was so good, how he thought these terrible things would never happen to him. Job is just like all of us in that, I guess. You know, you see something bad and that's always somebody else that happens to. So beginning in verse 18, he says, "Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters. The dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand." It's always going to be this way. It's really, really good. Everything is just like I would want it to be, and it's never going to change. I'm just going to get old gracefully, and I'm going to die in my comfort. Maybe Job is trying to nudge his three friends who are sitting so smugly before him, thinking that it can never happen to them. But he's certainly remembering what it was like, and he didn't think it would happen to him. He's not making this up for their sake. Even if he's nudging them, it's still true. Job never expected this kind of tragedy to come into his life. He had it great. He was enjoying it, and he thought it would not end. He's recounting real memories. I mean, this really happened. He's not making it up. This is how it really was. And now he's in anguish as he looks back because it's not that way anymore. He's calling it to mind, you know, it was good and it's gone. So anyone beyond a certain age of childhood can do this, right? You've got something that you enjoyed doing in the past, if you're more than 12, probably, that you look back on and you can't do that anymore. School's taking up more time now. I wish I were four again when I didn't have to, you know, all day was recess then. You know, now I'm six and I have to go to school. The good old days are gone. Anybody can do this. You don't have to have had the blessings that Job had to do what he's doing right here. And there's a real danger in thinking this way. Even though what he's thinking about was true. This really did happen. It was really that way. But there are two lines of thought running through what Job is saying here. First, Job is saying it was very much better then. And that's true. It was. It felt better then anyway. You know, outwardly, it was better then. But the other line of thought that runs through this is Job is saying, that's how it ought to be. I deserved that. And that's how it should be now. He's saying, even in this wealth and comfort that I had, I was righteous. And so people should have thought of me that way. And I should have had these blessings. And these comforts were the normal state of existence for me. And now they're gone, and that's wrong. He's giving a lot of attention to the idea that life should be defined by what he had when he liked it. That's normal. And what I have when I don't like it, that's a problem. He's trying to define normal. That's what life was supposed to be. Now in the next chapter, he turns to the other side of the equation. Then it was great. Now it's terrible. Look at chapter 30, beginning with verse 1. But now, those younger than I mock me, whose fathers I disdain to put with the dogs of my flock. Indeed, what good was the strength of their hands to me? Vigor had perished from them. From want and famine they are gaunt, who gnaw the dry ground by night and waste in desolation, who pluck mallow by the bushes and whose food is the root of the broom shrub. They are driven from the community. They shout against them as against a thief, so that they dwell in dreadful valleys, in holes in the earth and on the rocks. Among the bushes they cry out. Under the nettles they are gathered together, fools. Even those without a name, they are scourged from the land. And now I have become their taunt. I have even become a byword to them. They abhor me and stand aloof from me. And they do not refrain from spitting in my face, because he has loosed his bowstring and afflicted me. They have cast off the bridle before me. On the right hand their brood arises. They thrust aside my feet and build up against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They profit from my destruction. No one restrains them. As through a wide breach they come, amid the tempest they roll on. Stop right there for the moment. This is a complaint about how bad things are now. And in it is this continual comparison to how good things were before. Now, instead of respect, which I had before, I mocked and scorned. Now, instead of the very best people in society, the princes and the nobles, treating me with the utmost respect, now the very worst people in society, the ones that everyone else has thrown out into the wilderness, those people mock me and scorn me and abuse me and are willing to spit on me, and they're trying to profit from my hardship, and nobody stops them. Pretty poignant complaint, isn't it? Because it seems that God has deserted Job, everybody feels free to abuse him. If God's against him, we should be against him, so let's get him. Maybe he's got something left. He was pretty rich. Let's see what we can find, and we'll just take it from him. And so they abuse him. Now, these also are real events. Job's not making this up. He's recounting to his friends how it really is, how people really are treating him. He's describing his present troubles in graphic detail, but he's not making it up. And he points out that these troubles have very real ramifications in his life. Verse 15, terrors are turned against me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed away like a cloud, and now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have seized me, At night, it pierces my bones within me, and my gnawing pains take no rest. By a great force, my garment is distorted. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. My clothes don't fit anymore. I'm so contorted. Job says, I'm undone. All of this has happened, and now I'm ruined. My body's ruined. My life is ruined. My wealth is gone. Nobody respects me anymore. Inwardly and outwardly, physically and emotionally, it is over for me. There's nothing left. That's what he's saying. He's poured out. He's ruined. He's beyond hope. Now, in terms of the surface existence that we all have in this world, the day-to-day reality of life, in those terms, everything Job says in this part is true too. He's not making stuff up. He's not exaggerating. He's not hallucinating. He's not taking a little problem and blowing it all out of proportion. He really was the wealthiest man alive when he had his wealth, and now he's the poorest and most hated guy in the community because of the trouble that has come upon him. And God has taken Job to the absolute limit of his ability to endure. That's where he is right now while he says this. And because he was a righteous man, his ability to endure temptation is significantly higher than the ability of most people. He was the most righteous man. He had the most ability to trust God and to endure suffering. And so to take him to the limit was pretty significant, and that's where God has taken him. And now God has him there, enduring the absolute maximum that he can stand. Now we have a promise in the New Testament about this kind of trial in our lives. God has promised that he will never tempt us beyond what we can bear, but that with the temptation he will give a way out so that we will be able to endure it. That promise is in 1 Corinthians 10:13. God's character hasn't changed. His character was the same when this happened to Job as it was when we got that promise in the first century, as it is now, as that promise is still intact. God didn't tempt Job with more than he could bear either. But God has taken Job to the absolute limit of what he can stand. He's at the maximum of his ability. He can't take any more. And so he's just grieving in it. But the circumstances that he describes are absolutely true. So what's wrong with what Job's doing? I showed you my hand at the start. You know, I told you this is a bad example. If what he's saying is true, then how is it a bad example? What is he doing wrong? If he's recounting accurately the circumstances that he's in, what's wrong with what he's doing? Well, the problem here is that Job is focusing on those circumstances. And as he does that, he leaves God out of the issue. Oh, he mentions God in here, but he leaves out the true nature of God from his thinking about the issue. He looks at his circumstances and focuses on his circumstances with a wrong understanding of the real nature of God, and that leads to all the problems. And because of that flaw in his thinking, he's able to remember the details accurately and completely misunderstand the situation. And so he takes a bad situation and he makes it worse. Job is saying it was better then, and that's how it ought to be. I deserved what I was getting then, but I don't deserve what I'm getting now. And in the very way that he is thinking, he's making an accusation against God. You don't have to say, God, you're wrong and I'm right, to be making an accusation against God. All you have to do is hate what he's given you and think he's doing you wrong to give it to you. Job is saying, well, God, you got it wrong. Back then, that was right. Let's go back to that. This is wrong. You're doing it wrong. You've made a mistake. This isn't fair. I deserved that. That was better. So So Job is putting his mind on the wrong thing and thinking about it the wrong way and coming up with the wrong result in his life. Takes a bad situation and makes it even worse. The Bible gives us a lot of insight into what he's doing. In that text we read in our scripture time, a scripture reading a moment ago, is this verse, Ecclesiastes 7:10. Solomon gives this warning. Do not say, why is it that the former days were better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask about this. I remember seeing that verse years ago and it perplexed me. Why is that not wisdom? I couldn't figure it out for a long time. But there is a way that people think about the past and think about their lives and the progression of their lives that is not from wisdom. And it doesn't take the kind of calamity that Job endured for this lack of wisdom to manifest itself in our lives. All it takes is just something normal that you don't like. And this can come up for you. One of the things that finally helped me understand what that verse means was a visit I conducted quite a few years ago as a pastor of a church. I went to see a lady who was in her early 80s, couldn't leave her house, or very rarely left her house. You know, she was in some health issues. But a sweet, sweet lady. And we're visiting and we're talking, and you go by every now and then, and you know, you gotta keep the conversation going. And so eventually we get around to how people are in the church. And I mentioned to her that this man in our church was having a real bad time with his health, just a lot of little things. I knew he was having a hard time because he had told me. Now, this was a sweet little lady. She was a kind person. She was a self-sacrificing person. She was not at all a problem. She didn't give me any trouble. She was really nice. Really liked to go see her. When I mentioned this particular man's complaint, though, I did not get the gentle response that I had come to expect from this particular lady. She looks across that room at me, and she got all animated, and she said, "Oh, he's been fussing about being old for 40 years, and he's still not old." In just about that tone. And I, whoa. And then I thought about it a second. I'm like, here I'm sitting in a room with a lady in her early 80s who can't leave her house without tremendous difficulty, talking about a guy in his early 70s who does what he wants to, when he wants to, drives his car around town, comes and goes as he pleases. She never complains about anything that I've heard, and he's always hurting somewhere and telling everybody in the church about it. I start thinking about it. What's going on here? Quite an eye-opener, though. When I did the math and realized he started complaining about his aches and pains in his 30s. So this man's body began to change. That starts about 25. You notice it in your 30s. He started that long slide to the grave at exactly the same time in his life that every other human being who survives starts that slide. As his body began to change, he focused on what he didn't like about the changes. He made it a bigger issue than it was. He constantly set his mind on the worst aspects of this aging process that every human being goes through if we live. He continually complained about it. He always reminded himself of how much he didn't like it and how much better it had been way back when. And he thought about it that way for so long that by the time I came into his life, he couldn't think any other way. And every conversation with him included what hurt and how he couldn't see as well anymore and how hard it was now and how much better it was then. And it wasn't until this lady who had watched the whole 40-year process vented on me that day that I even realized it existed. It is possible to make yourself absolutely miserable, and it doesn't even have to be a bad situation. It can be God's design for your life. There's just some things about it you don't like, and so you start thinking about all that you don't like. And you say, why was it so much better then than it is now? When we do that, we need to realize what's going on. We need to realize that it is God that we have a problem with. This guy with the 40 years of aches and pains never thought about the aging process as something that every human being undergoes by God's design. Or if he did think about it, he rejected it. He wanted to have the body of a 25-year-old for 50 or 60 years and then die in his sleep. And he was mad at God that he couldn't have that. Even though nobody else ever had that, that's what he was upset about. He had a problem with the way God was working in his life. Much of how happy a person is just depends on how we think about our lives and what God has given us and what God has withheld from us. And those who are content are those who have learned to trust God in everything He gives us. So it doesn't have to be as dramatic as what Job went through. It could just be, you're 26 now, your body's starting to fade on you. How are you going to handle that? Whether you're 45 and have a midlife crisis? Gripe for 40 years about how bad it is? Could just be age that would reveal a problem with God. It could be an undesirable career change. It could be the lack of a desirable career change. It could be your budget. It could be the normal challenges of being married or the normal challenges of parenting in this phase of your children's life. Anything that happens to you that you don't like can produce in you this same thing we're seeing in Job in this chapter, these two chapters. It isn't about the circumstances. It's about whether we trust God in the circumstances. And when people are mad all the time and they're stewing all the time and they're always thinking it was better then, or if we just create an imaginary day in the future that'll never exist and say it will be better when we get our way this way, that person has a problem with God. It's not the circumstances. One of the beautiful things about the book of Job is that Job just doesn't hold back at all. He says things that none of the rest of us are willing to say. We wouldn't dare say what Job says, but we're thinking that way. And when we see him articulate it, then we realize, oh, I do that. Remember, Job has already been declared a righteous man. The most righteous man alive in his generation. And so this is how believers have a problem with God. Those that have been made righteous by the work of Christ in their hearts have a problem with God this way, manifests itself this way. Now let's look at Job 30, beginning with verse 19, and read a little more. He's speaking of God. He says, He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. I cry out, now he's praying to God, I cry out to you for help, but you do not answer me. I stand up, and you turn your attention against me. You have become cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride. You dissolve me in the storm. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house of meeting for all living. Now we get down to what's behind all of Job's meditations about how it used to be and about how it is now. It's a problem with God. This is what's behind it. This is why Job emphasizes certain things in his thinking, and this is why he's complaining about certain things that are going on now. He's saying that this is wrong now, that before is how it ought to be, and that God is denying him what he deserves. God has cast him down without cause, that God is persecuting him, that God is being cruel to him. He says he asked God for help and God has refused to help, that God is being unreasonable. This is Job's state of mind. And Job says so. The rest of us complain without ever really coming out with why. This is why. This is what lies behind a perspective that continually says it was better then or it would be better if I could have my way. Now, there's not a person in this room who doesn't do this. We all do this. We all think we ought to get what we want. We all think we ought to be able to define normal for our lives, sign up for the blessings we want, and have God give them to us on our schedule. So how do you get past this if we're all guilty, which we are? The problem hits us all, and the solution is elusive sometimes. We kind of get in an endless loop. You know, I just can't let go of this. I think the problem is my circumstances. I focus on the circumstances. I complain about the circumstances. I pine away for the good old days, or I create an imaginary future day when everything is going to be just like I want it and pine away for that day. I can't let go. And I just make it worse. So what do you do? Well, the only hope in breaking that cycle is to realize where the problem lies. I have to quit trying to put myself in the place of God. That's the problem. Job doesn't trust God with what God is doing in his life in this part of the story. Trusted him with the blessings, can't trust him with the hardship. And that's what we're doing when we complain all the time and when we fantasize someday when we can have our way. We don't trust him. We don't think he's wise to do this to us. We don't like it. We're fighting against his purpose. We're railing against his design for our personal lives. When it's hard, this is awfully easy to do. But that's what we're doing. And until we realize that that is the problem, then we can't get out of the problem, and all of our thinking about it just makes it worse. The solution is to stop fighting God and his purpose for your life, to trust him, to receive what he has for you, to be grateful for the blessings, even to be grateful for the adversity that he gives you. God has a design for your life. And as Solomon said in chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes, in the day of prosperity, be happy, but in the day of adversity, remember that God has appointed one as well as the other. He has a design for your life. And if you belong to him because you've trusted Jesus Christ, then that design includes adversity, sure. But your adversity is going to sanctify you and bring you to glory. And you have to learn to trust him, even with that. For those who have rejected Christ, there is adversity that leads only to death and eternal destruction. But if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, even your adversity is leading you to where you want to be, and you just have to trust God in the process. We fix our attention on the circumstances and on our wish list. We just make it worse. We have to learn to rest in him and receive what he has for us. And when we don't like it, we need to turn to him, not like this and say, "You're being cruel," to turn to him in prayer with broken hearts and say, "Oh God, give me the strength to endure and the faith to trust you. I know you're right, but help me with this weakness." We need to pray like that guy in Matthew who said, "Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief." That's what we have to do. It's the only hope. Think about our circumstances in a different way from the way Job is doing here. Can't question God's wisdom or God's goodness. We have to remember that his design is perfect, and if he puts us through something we don't like, there's a reason for it, and we're going to be grateful at the end of all of this. So it's a trust issue. Listen to the words from Peter from 1 Peter 4:17-19. He says, "For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? Therefore, those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right." Those who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. That's the solution. It's a trust issue. This is the only way you'll ever face your problems without making them worse. Now, Job is going to figure it out before the end of the book. But he makes himself miserable for a good while getting there, doesn't he? Learn from his example. Save yourself the hardship. And trust your soul to the faithful Creator. Spend your life doing what is right with the resources you have today. You can't live your whole life being 25. God didn't give you 50 years of being 25. He could have. We could all be young and healthy for 70 years and then die in our sleep. That's not God's design. God didn't design a world for you in which you never had a setback at work, never had a problem with a neighbor, never had a hardship within your family, never had a sick day of your own. God didn't make it that way. And if you pine away thinking, "Well, I wish it was like yesterday. That was better than today," you're just going to be miserable and miserable to be around. This message in 1 Peter is written to Christians. Trust yourself to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. It's the only solution. It's the only way to be happy. It's the only way to be content. Think of standing before God having wasted 40 or 50 years pining away for something that doesn't exist. Or standing before God having spent your life investing it in other people, loving other people, bearing up under all circumstances, trusting God, honoring Him. Which would you rather do? Job is giving us an abrupt perspective check. He's doing exactly what we all do, what we must stop doing if we want to be content. Let's bow in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this book of Job. The way it challenges our hearts and teaches us about you and teaches us about ourselves. Father, it is so simple. It's a trust issue. And yet it is so hard to get out of this loop when we get in it. Help us to entrust ourselves to you, to rest in you, to believe your promises, even on those dark days that we don't like. Lord, help us not waste years or even days pining away for some fantasy, but help us to live well today, to trust you today, to be instruments for your glory day by day. We ask all of this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.